Through grief there is no need to be ashamed of tears, for tears bear witness that a man had the greatest of courage. On today's podcast, I chat with Seamus Fox, who lost his father Shan after a 7-year battle with Parkinson's disease. Seamus expresses his outpouring of love for his father and discusses how he turned adversity into positivity. So welcome, how are you doing? How's things?
I'm
welcome
good.
To Memory of Me.
Are we started?
Yes, we're started.
Oh, sorry. Thank you very much, Bruno, for having me on the podcast. Do you want to start that over again?
No, it's grand. Just go with. How's things?
All good, Bruno. All good.
Happy days. I have Seamus Fox on the day. He's very well known in Derry. He is the owner of the Breathworks. We're actually on the studio right now. You're an author, a human behaviour coach as well, and you have the Mindset Junkie Academy and podcast.
Yeah. And the Mindset Junkie podcast.
There's
a few things going for sure.
Is there anything I've missed? Have you?
No. You've it all there.
Good. Brilliant. Happy days.
There's enough titles there.
Oh. So take us back, right, to who you are, where you're from, and the younger years of who Seamus is.
Where I'm from is, obviously, I'm from Derry.
Yeah.
I was born and raised in Gaelic.
Yeah.
I'm the youngest of seven. I grew up in Gaelic, Moss Park, to be exact.
Yeah.
Went to Sleavemore Primary School as a young kid. Graduated and went to St. Bridget's secondary school. And
how many children in the house was there?
There's seven of us.
Seven.
So there's five brothers and two sisters.
Yeah.
So I'm the youngest. I was called the spoilt one.
You're the Wayne.
Yeah, I'm the Wayne.
You were like my daddy.
I debate that. I actually had a chip on my shoulder on about it for years, to be fair. People call me spoiled. So grew up in Moss Park, grew up in Gaelic. My mother was Anne, father was Shan. Went to school, went to Sleavemore, went to St. Bridget's. Just kind of like trying to find my way for a lot of years, I think, just growing up, as most people do. Left school at around 15. Didn't really get school, didn't really understand
it. No, I think we actually touched on it in your podcast, IWE. I hated school. I hated it. Like, don't get me wrong, like, the school was grand and all, I'm not bashing the school, but I just wanted to fart around it. I didn't really care about school or anything like that. And I was the same, I just couldn't find my feet at all.
I didn't get it.
No.
I really didn't, and I still don't get it, to be honest.
No.
I don't understand it because we could go down a few rabbit holes,
yeah.
But there's a load of different reasons why I don't really get it.
Yeah.
And for me, I've always kind of been a free spirit. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to kind of do my own thing. Didn't really want to be attached to anything and didn't really want to be told what to do. And you have to go down this way and this has to be this way. I've never really been that type of person.
Mm.
So most times in school, I would just kind of sit and look out the window and daydream and think about doing something else. Playing football. So I kind of left school then at around 15, 16. Didn't sit any exams. Again, didn't see the point in them.
No.
So I just left. Tried to find my way for a few years, as we do. Became an apprentice joiner, became an apprentice plumber, liberator. I did all sorts, everything, roofing.
Uh-huh.
And did that for like a right few years, just again. And then kind of finding your way, getting into the party scene. Getting into the drink and the drugs and the weekends here and the weekends there.
Yeah.
But I just kind of did that for a long period of time.
Okay. Just really trying to find your feet again?
Wasn't even trying to find my feet. I just didn't really know who I was or who I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because when I think back, and still always had like some type of intuitive knowing that things were going to work out or things would be okay or I would get to do what it is that I was supposed to do, but I didn't really know what that was.
No.
Now, when I look back now, sitting at 40, I can kind of see what that was.
Yeah.
Because from a very young age, I was really, really involved in health and fitness.
Yeah.
Loved playing football, did a bit of boxing for a couple of years. Always involved in health and fitness. Really, really loved that.
Yeah.
Played football right up to, it was about probably 17 or so. Made a gear, football got sacked.
Sacked.
We went out drinking and doing all the usual things.
Yeah.
But it came back to that again then. So I started kind of like lifting weights and bodybuilding when I was younger. And then I kind of got away from that again then.
Okay.
And kind of went more into the just the kind of party scene and all that sort of stuff. But when I look back now, it was one of my highest values in my life, and it has been, and it's been a thread through all those years.
My God.
Yeah. And that's how I was able to like kind of navigate and get back to understanding then, right, well, this is what I was supposed to do.
Yeah, this is my purpose.
It started out as a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's in your early, would that be in your early 20s then you went into that and did the personal training and stuff? And
So I started, just kind of lifting weights in and around when I was about 17, 18. I was always really skinny.
Yeah.
Playing football was always really thin as well too, really, really skinny.
Yeah.
And I could never put weight on.
No.
And I was like, right, I used to call skinny and I was called this and called that. And I was like, right, I want to actually see if I can beef up. I was going to Gran Canarias. There's a whole squad of us going to Gran Canarias.
Right.
Anybody that's from Gaelic will remember it. There was about 30 of us. We all went to Gran Canarias when we were about 18.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, I want to try and put on a wee bit of muscle. And I started to just really, really enjoy it. I started training with Dorch, a guy at Dorch from Gaelic. Me and him used to go down the complex. If anybody remembers the bottom floor gym in the complex, don't know if you remember it.
No, there it was top for me.
There used to be the bottom floor gym in the complex down near the squash courts. So we started training in there. And then I just started really getting involved in like lifting weights and really enjoying that. And then I joined Dave Fox's gym, Pro Gym, when that just opened. He's opened 20 years now, so it's actually 20 years ago that myself and Ray Kelly, we joined that, got into it even more.
Yeah.
But I was never taking it serious.
Yeah.
No, there was never nothing. I was still kind of floating around and doing this and doing that and partying. And
so where in the business side of things get serious for you then of like, you know, starting your, didn't you say you started off on a beach and stuff too as well? Didn't you?
So that would have been years later.
Years later.
Yeah. So when I started, personal training was after I competed as a bodybuilder in 2005. I won the first timers category in the Mr. Northern Ireland, and that gave me a platform basically to start personal training.
Did you have any significant grief in your life at that stage? Anything at all? Or did you lose like anybody really close to you?
I had cousins and friends. I had friends in school, even like right back there when I was 10 and 12. I had close friends who had died in car crashes.
Yeah.
A wee guy, Barry, I remember well. He died in a car crash. And at that age, I didn't understand it. Didn't process it.
No.
I remember going to his like wake, and I think I was around 11 or 12, and standing looking at him in the coffin going, what?
This is crazy.
What's happened? I was in his house last week. So I've had friends and things like that. I had a young cousin who would have been older than me.
Yeah.
He died in England when he was 21, fell off a scaffolding. I was only around about 12, Charlie Fox.
Yeah.
But again, not really understanding that.
Do you think, like, years ago and like old school ways, do you find that like grief now seems to be a lot more opened? People are more talking about it. There's stuff in associations. There's all different platforms now for grief. Do you think back then there was nothing really for people? Because I've said it, and I said it last week here in a podcast too as well, that like even though I lost my daddy, which is going to be 7 years now on the 27th of February, even back then I had people at my daddy's funeral telling me, don't you be crying, you know, you need to not, no, don't be getting upset and all, no, you don't want to upset your man, you know, blah blah blah. But I never took no malice out of that. I just thought, right, okay, that's the way we go. That's also, we know how to do a good wake and funeral, but when it comes to the aftermath, we're not so good at. Do you find, like, years ago, you know, there was just this, like, you're a man, you have to get on with things?
100%. And I think there's still, like, a really strong element of that now as well, especially for men.
Yeah.
And that would have been part of the conditioning again. Like, just get out and get on with it, and no, don't show your feelings or your emotions, and you're supposed to be the man of the house, and you're supposed to look after this, that, and the other, and that definitely
would have
been part of the condition.
And that manifests in other different ways then too as well, especially with men too, you know, the likes of drink, whatever's going on, that they numb that pain, or, you know, let's go on a binger and not think about that for a couple of days. I'm not saying every man's like that, but I'm saying that, you know, that there really was like this kind of, you know, I actually spoke to somebody there not that long ago, and they were saying too as well, where a friend of theirs who says, you know, I'm not having a great day or blah blah blah, mom, me and you get a pint, mom will get a, you know, that was the kind of, right, you know, and the next thing in, within 5-10 minutes, you're not talking about it.
Then you're worse the next day, because it's a natural a depressant anyway.
Yeah.
So you're feeling even worse about yourself the next day, and you haven't resolved the actual issue that wanted you to go and take a drink first.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't really drink a wild lot. You know, I would have a drink and maybe not have a drink for 3 months.
Mm.
do you know, I haven't had a drink since January, and nothing has fizzled me. Like, there's, I don't have a real interest of going out, you know, that yeah. kind of way.
Yeah.
I do like to get out, and I do like to get dolled up, and all that works, but it doesn't really, the drink side of things, especially with grief, my grief with my daddy, with drink, was, I went down a really bad cycle. And that always petrifies me to my core end ever since.
Because you know the feeling of what it's going to be like the next day.
Yeah, 100%.
100%.
Like it's horrendous at times. Do you know, it really, really is.
I'm off it now 4 months, and I posted loads about it on my social media as well too, around it. Drink's always been something like that for me. It's just been a nemesis of mine.
Okay.
And I've always had that thing where, like, I know I don't want to do it.
Did anything trigger you, or did you say, do you know what, that's I just don't want to...
Trigger me to go off it again?
Yeah.
I went off it 2 years ago.
Right.
Just before lockdowns, I was off it for about 14 months.
Right.
And I was feeling fucking great. Yeah. Feeling fantastic. Like, as most focused as I've ever been. But I've always had something in my head saying to me, if I want to get to the next level, if I really want to reach my goals, if I really want to do what I want to do, this can't be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But our culture and how we grow up and what we see and all these different things, it's really hard to get away from it.
Yeah.
So I went off it for 14 months, lockdown happened, and I was like, right, I'm not drinking, and then we were locked down for about a month, and I was like, fuck, the world's falling apart here.
Yeah.
Me having a drink's not going to be worse.
No, 100%, yeah. So,
but that, see, from that point until 4 months ago, for like the last 2 years, it's been in my head going, you need to stop, you need to stop, you need to stop, because I could see the patterns. There's alcoholism in like my family.
Okay.
And... I can see the traits.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I can see the traits, I can see the addictions, and I can see the patterns. Mm-hmm. And I can see them in myself as well, too.
Yeah.
So I know in my own head I was going, I need to actually stop this. And it was how it was leaving me feeling.
Aye.
Like, I was trying to go to work, I was trying to do this, I was trying to do that. I was doing it at around 50%. Like, so I think I had about 5 days on the trot about 4 months ago, and I just went, right, no. It was actually the first time that I was watching a podcast, actually, in Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And there was a girl talking about addictions.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I would love to be one of those people that could go out and have a drink and then that would be it, or could take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
She said, but I had to admit that I don't have control in that way.
Yeah.
And it was like, fuck.
Yeah.
I had to kind of say, I don't have control that way.
No.
Like, because if I start, then it's the only thing that's occupying my mind. I want to just keep drinking.
Mm-hmm. But I even think now, especially even this turn, even a friend of mine, Gary Rollerford, with Arc Fitness, like he's doing amazing work too as well. I think that there is, do you know...
more people there to go and talk to. I was down with Gary. I reached out to him.
Yeah, Gary's brilliant. Yeah. Him and my daddy would have been really good friends too as well. So we have that connection too as well. But he's doing great work too as well.
100%.
He really, really is.
And that's opening up like for men, and it's opening up for more people to be able to go, right, well, do you know what? Like, you can kind of get rid of that stigma. Most people, what are you not drinking for?
Exactly.
Why, Jesus, it's only a drink.
Exactly.
It's only a pint.
I know.
Like, you wouldn't say to a drug addict, sure, it's only a wee, it's only a drug, or it's only a shot of heroin, just take a shot of heroin.
I know, exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. But that's
the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And, like, people that have those, like, addictive personalities or those traits, they can't just go and have a pint.
No, definitely not.
And that's kind of the way I seen... it was for me that I wasn't in control of it in the way that I thought it was. Yeah.
So you had the struggles with that too, as
100%, I had loads of them.
So you've had struggles throughout your life, and you've spoke openly about that with your book too as well.
Mm.
So take us now to 2016. Your father passed, Shan.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So can you just, first of all, before we speak about that, can you just give us a wee insight? Can you describe how your daddy was?
My dad was an easygoing, kind of fun-loving guy.
Right, okay.
That's kind of the way he was.
Because you were the way into the house too as well.
I was the way into the house. He was, my ma, in our house, what way I say it.
Mammy, I call her. Loads of people have
always
said to me,
why
do you call your mammy?
Yeah, so anybody that's listening from Derry will know it's my, anybody elsewhere.
Well,
I'm talking about my mum.
Yeah.
So she was always kind of the stern one in the house. So she was always the one that was always the one that kind of was more of the hard side of it, let's say, and my dad would have been the opposite. So my dad was always kind of that fun-loving guy, just wanted to have an easy time, wanted to enjoy life, and he did.
Yeah.
And he did enjoy life. Yeah. That's the way he was. And up to his death in 2016, he had Parkinson's.
Okay.
He had Parkinson's for about 7 years.
Oh, my God.
Was bedridden for 7 years. And then he died in 2016, yeah.
God, that must have been hard on the family too as well.
It was a massive strain. So he had a fall. He had a fall at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was taken in the hospital and they did tests and stuff.
Yeah.
And he came out. We could, like, looking back now, there was loads of signs, but we didn't know.
No.
One of them was his ability to swallow.
Yeah.
For a few years in the run-up there, he was choking on food. He would have been choking on this and choking on water or like whatever type of food he was eating. And one of the signs of Parkinson's is your ability to swallow.
Okay. This,
like your strength and being able to swallow starts to diminish.
Yeah.
But he had a fall, ended up in hospital. They did tests and they were able to tell us. And then he came out and we had a bed downstairs then for a while. So
your Mahler nursed him at home then?
And we all did at the start.
We
all took our turn.
Yeah.
I was still personal training, I think in Fitness First maybe, or Energy or something at the time.
Okay.
So we all had to take our turn and stay over, and his bed would have been down the stairs and you'd have been lying on the floor and he'd been snoring his head off, and I mean, smaller in a minute. I have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. We go and start work at 6 and he's snoring his fucking head off here. So we all did our bit at the start, and then after about a year, it just started to get worse, and I ended up the stairs in. So they brought a lift, and they put a lift in the house and stuff.
That must have been a huge impact too, as well, on your family too.
Massive. It was a massive strain. Like,
did you find when your daddy was diagnosed with that, did you find that you were grieving him already at that stage? That you knew that this was going to be, you know, not the outcome that you wanted then in the end?
Kind of, I.
Right.
Because it's funny you say that, because near the end when he passed away, I kind of went through a lot of those processes.
Right, okay.
No, I was like, that's not me die anymore.
No.
Do you know what I mean? And it's funny when you look at grief and when you look at like human behavior in general, like a lot of times we miss the traits and the things that we really love in a person.
Yeah.
We miss the traits that we really admire in a person.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that grieving process is no longer seeing those traits or admiring those traits or having them there.
Mm.
And that gradually started happening when we die anyway.
Okay.
Over time.
Yeah.
So the things that I really loved or admired in them, like, that started to diminish.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're never lost. They're always in somewhere else. Or they're picked up by somebody else, or another person brings them into your life in some way or form. But if we're not conscious of that, we don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, for the last few years, I had kind of come to that position where
you came to terms with
it? It was kind of gone.
Yeah.
He didn't know who I was for like the last few years. So there was all that was played in there as well too.
That's
so
heartbreaking too as well. You know?
So in my head it was like, it's not him anyway.
No.
Do you know what I mean? That's
that's
not even him that's there anyway. So
That, you know, I don't think I've actually spoke to anybody that's, you know, who's had that kind of long-term illness like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so when he passed then, what was the next stages then? What was the wake and the funeral and stuff like then? Was it, your 2016, you had the normal wake, funeral and all
normal,
that.
We had a big send-off and there's loads of people came down to the house. It was May.
Yeah.
The weather was brilliant. It was like really, really sunny. It's strange because, like, you know yourself, yours was different because it happened unexpectedly and sudden. And we had kind of been waiting for my daddy to die for a period of time.
Yeah.
He contracted pneumonia. But he lived for another, I think, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. And they had put a driver in and they had done all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And we were expecting him not to live like that long. At the end up, he ended up with one lung.
My God.
And the night that he died, I think the house for, like, it was basically like a wake house for 2 weeks.
Aye.
So
because you were waiting?
Aye.
Yeah.
So I remember saying, and it started to get hot and tempered and like brawlers, and we started starting to crack up with each other, and it was starting to get hot because the tension was there. So I remember saying I said to my older sister, and I said to a few of my aunts, and I says, he's not going to pass with everybody here.
No.
No, he's too proud.
Yeah.
No, the whole place like a spectacle.
Yeah.
And I think it was that day everybody left, and then he passed that night.
My God.
So
what age was your daddy?
76.
To me, that's still a young man. Do you know? Mm. Definitely. Just take a couple of breaths. And do you know, that's what you need to show too as well, your vulnerability. Do you know what I mean? That's your daddy. Mm. I get that, Seamus. I have lost my daddy too as well. Do you know what I mean? And it doesn't matter what age. at all whatsoever. It's still your flesh and blood, still your daddy.
But to be honest, like how it kind of played out for so many years, you know, as I said, we just kind of watched them like deteriorate for so long.
Yeah.
And it was just his time to go. It was fair on him.
Aye.
No, we had carers coming in, but my mum's not a spring chicken.
Yeah.
She was a couple of years younger than him.
Yeah.
So she was doing a lot of caring for him as well too. And then you had obviously his sisters and brothers all playing their part as well too. There's a massive stress on the and family, because they would have been in homes and they'd have been back out again and back into the home. And
it must have been so tiring too as well. Do you know? But then at the same time too, you probably go on to that air pilot mode where you're like, do you know what, we'll do whatever. As long as he's comfortable, then we're fine.
That's it.
And even showing your vulnerability there, right? You know you're what, 6 years down? Because I'm seven now, so you're six.
Yeah.
Do you know the rawness is still there?
100%.
The rawness is still there. And do you know, I find too as well, like I actually did a radio interview yesterday and a guy said something to me and he meant no malice or none at all, but he said to me, have you processed the loss of Berkey and blah, blah, blah? And I was just like, no, I haven't. And, you know, I was honest and I says, you know, I feel like he's still going through that door or whatever. That triggered me straight away. Straight away. Going up a road then yesterday, I just whacked on Mary Kew's podcast then because I wanted to replay it in the house, but in the way up in the car. But that, just one wee thing like that just texts me back to my vulnerability, texts me back where that's where I start to panic and I'd be like, oh my God, he's actually not here and blah, blah, blah. And then I have to change my mindset now about that. And, you know, that try not let the unknown, you know, cripple me with fear.
And that's the thing, as I said, like generally I've dealt with a lot of it, do you know what I mean? But I don't talk about it.
No.
Do you know what I mean? And I don't talk about him. And maybe like you bringing that up right now, and that's made me emotional.
No,
and maybe that's a reason. Again, maybe it's a conscious motive of why I don't talk about him.
Do you know where you're like, so your career and all the amazing things that you're doing now, did your daddy have any big decisions on that? Did you ever speak to your daddy about any of them? Did he know any about
it? He didn't know most of it.
Okay,
because that's the thing. Kind of, it developed dementia then near the end as well too. So as I started kind of doing well in my career and it started to really tick off, no, he would go on and talk to him about it, but he just didn't get it.
No,
as I said, a lot of times he didn't even know who it was.
No.
For the last few years, he still thought in his mind that I was a wee kid. So my ma would say to him, that's Seamus, and he has his business, and he's married with his own wains. Get yourself on.
He wouldn't get it.
So in my head, it was like, that's done. Do you know what I mean? And it was kind of hard, like, because there was a lot of stuff that you would have wanted him to see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
no matter what, even, you know, he's always, I know this is a cliche thing to say, but I genuinely do. They're always wee.
100%.
No matter what, do you
100%.
Know, they really, really are. Like, you know, we'll talk about in a wee minute about the breath works. Like, there's a lot of times where, you know, I feel their presence here. And I don't feel that in the house and I'm doing the online one.
Yeah.
But I definitely, when I'm here, there's something about the studio, which we will talk about now in a wee minute.
I believe as well, too, that he's there and he's maybe seen things maybe after, or he's passed on, like in another realm. I don't believe like that consciousness just ends. I believe that consciousness lives on. I think that that's who we are and what we are, like eternally.
Yeah.
That we are conscious and consciousness lives on.
Yeah.
Outside of the brain, lives on outside of the body.
Yeah.
So yeah, I believe that his energy's been around. I don't know where it is right now.
Yeah.
But it was for a while, because I could sense that after as well too.
Yeah.
Like immediately after his death.
He's been your biggest loss.
Yeah.
That's been your biggest loss too as well.
Yeah.
Which is really, really hard, because
it was for sure.
Losing your daddy is like, I'm very fortunate I still have my mommy, but my daddy was my best friend. Like,
especially a gear.
Yeah, he was. Daddy's like my daddy would have still seen me as that 7 year old with pigtails too as well. You know, you were saying there about your daddy too. I know your daddy's circumstances were different, but my daddy, even when I bought a house and everything, he still seen me. He called me the Wayne.
Yeah.
I was the Wayne, even though I was the youngest.
Yeah.
Do you know, still the Wayne.
100%. And then being a daughter, I know myself having a daughter, you know, that connection, that bond, it's totally different.
Yeah. So did you have so your daddy passed in 2016?
2016, he passed, and
So what was like? What was life like afterwards then? Did you throw yourself on the business?
Yeah. So I like business was taking off at that time. I had a franchise going and everything was going like well. And between all of that, and I think that maybe that was a, not even a, like really, really think on it. I think it was maybe a getaway. I tried to ignore maybe all that stuff that was going on, or I knew what was going on, but I was like, I need to focus on this. I need to do this. I need to grow this, and this needs to happen. And it did, and business was going well. I created a franchise in 2016. At that time, in my dad's death, we had four different places.
Yeah.
It was just really starting to get traction and starting to really grow.
So that really was your coping mechanism, then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. Unconsciously. Maybe, yeah. It was something that I was plowing my time and energy into. No, it's obviously something I'd done way before all that anyway.
Yeah.
But it might have been a motive.
Could have blocked it a wee bit, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then after his death, that kind of collapsed. The business collapsed within the space of about a month after my dad dying. So at that time, I was trying to grieve my dad. But I was more angry and caught up in the business collapsing and what I thought that people had done to me at that time, and I wasn't able to process that either. So
did you have initially, strikes of anger too as well with that?
100%. Yeah, I was angry, and I was like all my time was I wanted to get back at these guys, and I wanted to like find out like why they did this and why they did that. And hindsight's a great thing.
Yeah,
I look back on that now and think differently. I don't blame those guys at all.
No,
but at the time, that's who I blamed. I was like, how could you do this? Mm-hmm. How could you do that? My dad's just after dying, he's written the wake, and now he's like, have let me down in business, and you've done these things, and blah, blah, blah. So it took me, I'd say, a good 8 months, 9 months, to kind of, like, take my head out of my ass.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how much of a bad spot I was actually in until the following year.
Okay.
When I really started to come around again.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember then going, right, I had that guilt because my dad's just died and all I'm caring about is my business.
Yeah.
All I'm caring about is, like, trying to get this back on track.
Yeah.
All I'm caring about is, like, how embarrassed I feel that I've put all these goals and dreams out into the world and spent all this money.
You were broken.
Aye.
Yeah.
I was, that's the way it was, like, trying to get up in the morning to go and coach people.
Yeah.
Was the last thing in my mind, but I knew how to do it.
Yeah.
So there was a load of things that I was trying to process at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in my mind at that time, the guilt was because I wasn't allowing myself the time to grieve.
Okay.
For me, that I was too focused on, I need to sort out this franchise, I need to get some way back, I need to get these guys to court, all these different things.
Yeah.
This was all happening at that time.
See, when that was going through that, and over them couple of years, did your grief manifest at any stage throughout from 2016 to now? Did you have any real kind of downtime, do you know?
I've had downtimes, of course, especially just straight after it. Like, I remember, like, just those initial couple of weeks, like, as you know, you're just, you don't know where you're going or what you're doing, or like,
it's a shit show.
You're just all over the place. You're literally all over the place. But it was like literally within a couple of weeks, those things happened.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to switch on again and think, right, well, I need to try and sort this out. But it was probably around October, I picked up a book called Wake the Fuck Up by a friend of mine, Brett Moran.
Mm-hmm.
He's a friend now, wasn't then.
Yeah.
Read his book, got in contact with him, and we've become good friends. And
did you find reading helped?
Yeah. So I would
I'm interested to hear this because I don't read.
I've always been a reader.
Right,
like,
okay.
More so in the mid-20s. I think probably more so when I started personal training. And I seen it then as something I needed to read for. And, and I've become a massive reader then since. But I read his book called Wake the Fuck Up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting reading it, and I can remember where I was reading it. It was at the pier in Inch, a cycle down. I was living in Argreens at the time. Cycled down, took a bike down, took my lunch down, took a book down, took a flask of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in the pier and I was reading the book. And he was talking about accepting responsibility. Accept 100% responsibility for everything in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quoting Jack Canfield,
okay,
who was a guy that he met and mentored him, and they appeared in a film together. And Jack Canfield is a success principles as a coach. And it was like, boom. It was like getting slapped in the fucking face.
Yeah.
That's what it was like.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Why am I, like, being a victim?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I, like, blaming these guys and blaming this and blaming that? And
what took you to Inch?
All those things.
Did you have any, was there any, like, childhood memories with your daddy there? Or did you just went
somewhere
there
nice.
For, Okay, right.
Just somewhere nice.
I thought it meant Sunday. Do you know?
Nah, no. There was nothing there in that way. It was just a nice cycle down, like.
Yeah.
And it really made me wake up. And it made me wake up to the point that I seen that I was, like, just being a victim to myself and blaming everybody else for all these things. So I had to think about it and go, right, well, how can I accept responsibility for everything that's happened in this situation, for the business collapsing, for these things collapsing? And when I did it, it took a weight off my shoulders.
Yeah.
I was able to start to see, right, I started to put myself in those guys, their minds, and see how they were thinking about it and what their concerns.
Just completely changed.
Everything shifted and changed again. I'm not saying that everything was rosy and posy and everything
not
was
at all,
plain
not
sailing
at all,
after.
But you were trying your best.
Yeah, but there was just at that time, it was like, right, I've just like been going down a rabbit hole here, acting a victim and fucking, woe me.
Yeah.
And nobody's coming to save you. Like.
I get that. You go through them stages through grief.
Yeah.
Do you know, where you lash out and you think, I am the only person going through this, that. And once you actually get that reality check, you're like, no.
It's funny because I wasn't connecting that to grief at all. No. I was connecting it to the business.
Mm.
I was connecting it to the collapse.
Been.
I know. Mm. But over there, I was maybe grieving over the idea that
this
whole thing. So I've never connected it that way. And I've always, like, for me, it was, I wasn't acting a victim in terms of myself to the grief.
No.
It was, I'm acting a victim to these guys, and I'm blaming these guys for doing this, and I'm blaming everybody else for doing this, and I need to actually own up and take responsibility and take it on my shoulders and stop blaming. And when you do that, you liberate yourself.
You do. But you went from strength to strength then.
Yeah.
Which you have over the past couple of years with your business. You've done a TED Talk as well, haven't you?
Yeah, did a TED Talk. It's funny because more of the things that I've studied, more of the things that I've learned, more of the things that I've delved into with myself, I've seen that so many times these events aren't like sabotaging events, but they're self-serving in so many ways. Like, there's never one without the other. I mean, like, there's never a positive without a negative.
Yeah.
The law of polarity is that both sides are equal.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times, if we view it in one specific way, we only see it one specific way.
Mm-hmm.
So I look back in those events and say, well, they were actually a blessing.
Aye.
No, those things happened for a reason, because I grew more and I went in the right direction. Like, when I look back, I didn't even want a franchise.
No, no,
I didn't want to have all these different gyms,
that
really.
Maybe your daddy was guiding you to that. You know, you were saying, you were touching on, you are a very spiritual person too as well. Do you think maybe it could have been your daddy saying, go on, Seamus, you can do this, make your family proud?
Like, to grow the business?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. And that's just being totally honest.
Mm. I do, personally, after hearing your story.
Yeah.
You know, and the opening up like that, I do think that he is right behind you.
Oh, since then?
Mm.
After his death, I think so. I think that I've gained strength and momentum from that, for sure.
Yeah.
100%. There's been definitely times where
because once something like that happens in your life, do you know, really, what you really worried about doesn't really matter.
No.
Like, I worried about shit, and I, you know, when impact like that happened in my life with the death of, you know, my father and my husband within 5 years, them stupid things that I worry about don't matter at all.
Of course.
Do you know, it does, it change great.
In the grand scheme of things,
it changes your whole, it did for me in bad and good ways.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, it changed my mindset and all, I'm all positive and blah, blah, blah. That just took a lot of work.
100%. And it's a continuation. No, it's something that you're going to continue to do. Like, that's something that you deal with, and I think it's something that you grow through and that you evolve through, and you learn more about yourself, and you have different ways with dealing with it. Like, there, me getting emotional there right now, it's probably the first time I've been emotional like that, even talking about me, Dan. I couldn't tell you how long.
But you could have been compressing the emotions down.
Yeah, 100%. So, again, as I said, I don't talk about them.
No.
Because I don't generally feel that it's an issue.
No, it might not be an issue, but it's clearly sensitive subject they speak about, you know, that kind of way. Because I find that with men and anybody that I've done the podcast with, men wise, do you know, it takes a lot. You're amazing anyway, and you know, you're inspiring so many people, but for men especially, it takes a lot for a man to really open up and say their truth, you know, because there's this kind of get on with things, do you know, you'll be all right. As I said a wee while ago, here, mom will go for a pint and blah, 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 do you know.
100%. And I sensed that even at the time of his funeral, do you know what I mean? Just kind of being the youngest and Helping to organize things, yeah, and getting things the way it should have been and all these different things. And I remember, like, even in my head at that time, don't be showing emotion, be strong and all those things. That. You know what I mean? It's all bravado shit. Like, why should you not fucking break down and cry? You just lost your dad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or you've lost a brawler or your mother, mm-hmm, or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Show your emotion and let it out. Yeah. You're not big for suppressing it and keeping it down.
Definitely not.
Because it's not fucking helping anybody.
Because especially with the likes of, men and women too, but, you know, with the likes of men, with their men's mental health and all, you know, we're great to say, right, we'll promote it and we'll do this and blah, blah, blah. But actually getting the rawness of it is a whole different ballgame.
100%.
Do you know? It really, really is. Do you know?
And you touched on it there now, like, being open enough to open up.
And be honest.
And be honest.
And say your truth about it.
Exactly.
Do you know, 100%. So tell us now about the businesses. What's happening now? So we're on the Breathworks studio now. So we're
on the Breathworks. The Breathworks opened up this year. Yeah. Opened up in January.
What made you... So you had the gym... You've had the Mindset Junkie Academy.
The gym's going 10 years now. 2010, I started, you mentioned that the boot camp.
Yeah.
Started that, had a brief stint in Australia. Came back, started that with a few people on a beach, and then that just quickly grew and expanded. Mm-hmm. So we're 10 years old now with the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got the Mindset Academy. I opened that up in lockdown.
Right, okay. Right. Yeah. So that's very recent then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was created during lockdown.
Did you find that helped people with the likes of lockdown? Do you know, being so isolated and, you know...
The academy?
Yeah.
100%, yeah.
I would say.
I had another business myself in Noel Smith.
Okay.
Noel Smith Waterside owns PTC.
Right.
So me and him put our heads together. We had a business called Elevate, and we coached gym owners and personal trainers, and then it kind of went into small business owners, more around kind of sales and marketing, things, mm-hmm, like that. And the vast majority of our clients were gym owners. Lockdown happened, mm-hmm, and we kind of got everybody over to online, and they were fine, but we were left with a wee bit more time. And I've always wanted to do more in and around the mindset and human behavior anyway, even within, like, coaching as a personal trainer, and even within Elevate,
mm-hmm,
that was always what I was geared towards. It was always that type of coaching I was really interested in, to get, mm-hmm, people to do specific things, or why are you not doing this?
Yeah.
I want to understand why you're not doing it. What are the blocks here? Or, like, how can we overcome those blocks?
Is that because the struggles that you had throughout your 20s, you know, going on near under your 40s now, that you wanted to help people change their mindset because you changed yours?
100%. And, like, you know the story.
Yeah.
Like, the journey that I've been on, and, like, smashing cars and the walls and all those types of things, mm-hmm, not things that I wanted to be doing, but I was doing them.
No.
And I didn't really know how to change.
No.
And thankfully and fortunately, I started personal training. I got back in and involved with something that I really loved and valued. And then my career started to take off, mm-hmm, from there.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward to lockdown, we had, as I said, the academy, opened, mm-hmm, up the academy. I actually had an event at the City Hotel.
Right.
And we went on the lockdown. So what I did was I just put the event into a four-week program, delivered it over 4 weeks during lockdown, and then people wanted more. And it was like, right, okay, let's put this together. And, mm-hmm, it's grown a lot over the last 2 years, thankfully. It's just
really
taken
off. And is it open
to
anybody? Does it just have to be a male, a female? Or
no.
It's open to anybody? Anybody wants to change their mindset?
People that wants to shift. Like, most people know that they can do more. Most people know that they want to do more, but are maybe a wee bit stuck. Mm-hmm. And we all have, specific conditioning that we've grown up in and around,
mm-hmm,
that, for me, creates a blueprint.
Yeah.
It creates a blueprint of who we think we are, what we think we're capable of, what we think we deserve, what we don't think we deserve. And a lot of that is unconscious, this. And part of the academy and part of my coaching is to help people bring the unconscious conscious.
Yeah.
And you can start to change that. You can start to see what it is that's holding you back, why you feel it's holding you back,
mm-hmm,
and how to look at it differently and how to reprogram that. And your brain is basically like a program. And most of the programs that we've got running, mm-hmm, are unconscious days, but they're controlling our behaviors and our habits and our results.
Yeah.
So part of the academy is helping people to look into that. And they start looking towards where it is that they really want to be.
Yeah, like their end goals with stuff.
Yeah, so they start, mm-hmm, moving towards that.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's been going the last couple of years. And in the Breathworks, we started in January.
Okay, so where did I know you're a trained, what is the fancy word for it? Because I don't really know.
Yeah, it's funny because Dan, as you well know, Dan was like, he wears so many different hats. And I was
what's the odds?
Yes, exactly. So
what's the odds?
For me, I like to coach people. It's human behavior, really.
Okay.
I want to get people to change their behaviors so that it leads them towards where it is that they really want to be mm-hmm. and where they really want to go. And I use different tools for that to happen. So I've mm-hmm. studied like hypnosis.
Yeah.
I'm a DeMartini, Dr. DeMartini, one of his facilitators. I've did his program and went through his certification. And then I signed up last year to Soma, which is a breathwork coach facilitator. Okay. So signed up to do that.
So you wanted to bring it here to Derry then? Well, yeah. You, online classes too as well. So anywhere really, yeah. Anybody in the world can do it.
Yeah. So yeah. I was doing that. I've always been interested.
Yeah. Over,
the first time that I ever did any type of breathwork was at UPW with Tony Robbins in London, probably about 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
And he had like this priming exercise and you did it every single morning, which was like, and we've done it on here before, but it was basically like an inhale through the nose, an outhale through the mouth, and we had like a pumping exercise okay. with your arm movements. So we started doing that and applying that every morning. It was a priming thing that you did for your brain to get yourself focused every day. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting into breath work probably about 3 years ago, mm-hmm. Through Aaron Dean. Started okay. doing more with Aaron. Started doing cold water therapy with Aaron. And then I just started really using that in my own routine and mm-hmm. then started to apply it with some of the clients I was coaching and people started really enjoying it. And then
because
last
a lot
year,
of people
have
said like it reduces their anxiety and stuff.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Did you ever suffer with any type of anxiety?
It wasn't something that was really prominent. When I was drinking more, it definitely had it. There was an underlying feeling of it there all the time.
Yeah.
And I would use those tools then to get myself going in the morning and then I would feel grand. Now those feelings have gone now since I'm not drinking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's massive for anxiety. It's massive for health in general. It's massive for every single aspect of like mental health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So did the Soma course last year.
Yeah.
And loved it. Loved the program, loved the music. Started delivering it more online. People were loving it. And I was just like, do you know what?
Why not? A business?
Just open a wee studio here and see how it goes.
And it's literally January, isn't
January,
it?
January, yeah.
Like it's came from strength to strength. Like it's fully booked tonight again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You could quadruple size this place, the amount of people who are really, a lot of people. I know that it's open to everybody really in the world. As you said, you have people from New Zealand and Australia
and
all
over,
that, who did at it. But do you know, here, do you know, anything really, not just here, but obviously because we're on Derry now, I'm just speaking because we're here. People want to change their mindset. Mm. People want more. The gym and, you know, that side of things might not be beneficial to everybody else. Maybe somebody wants to reduce that for anxiety. Like, every time I come here, I get a different experience.
Yeah.
Literally every single time. And it takes me to places that I might not want to go to, but I go to it.
Yeah.
It might take me places where I'm like floating. I'm thinking, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
But it takes you to different places.
100%. And you hit the nail on the head. Like, you kind of get a different session every time.
It's not the same one.
Even if we did the same thing every time, you would get a different experience because of where you're at and how you're thinking and how you're feeling.
Yeah.
But in terms of like how it actually benefits mental health and like physical well-being.
Yeah.
There's loads of science behind it as well, too, in terms of what it actually does and how it functions.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a massive need for it, I think, in the town.
Oh, huge.
There's a massive need for it. And I think that people are looking for something deeper.
100%. People are crying out for help, too, as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, the likes of the... And this is not bashing the health service by any means, but, you know, there you are. I'm one of them. I am put on a waiting list for the past 18 months and still have not been seen. And people like me are the exact same situation. Or maybe just people don't want to throw themselves under counselling because, again, but like myself, I found that it was, you know, I'm not bashing counselling or anything like that. Mm. But to me, it was putting salt under the wound.
Yeah.
And people want to do, they want to benefit from different things.
Yeah.
So the likes of this is just absolutely fantastic. And this is not just obviously for people who are grieving. I just mean people who want to change their mindset, their well-being and stuff like that.
100%.
Because my mindset has totally changed.
Yeah.
Like we met up in the November for a coffee and I was like, Seamus, can't get my hand here. Yeah. I'm thinking about starting up a podcast, you remember? And I was like, where can I go with things or whatever? And then I've kind of went on board then of doing the likes of the breath works. And I've jumped on one or two times as well for the academy sessions. Mm. And you know, my mindset has completely changed. Like I am like a different person now than what I was. You know, yes, the pain, the heartache, the loss and all that, the loneliness, the vulnerability is still very much there, but I don't want that to define me as well as a person. Do you get what I mean?
100%. 100%. And your mindset has changed now because, again, you're focusing on other things like your podcast and the growth of that and how you're impacting other people. Mm-hmm. And you've been doing that with their Instagram, but what you're doing now through your podcast and speaking to other people. And you're going to change because you're taking on new information.
Oh, 100%.
And you're surrounding yourself with different people. And there's no other way but to change when you start taking on new information. And why so many people start to stay stuck is because they stay stuck in patterns. They stay stuck doing the same things over and over and over again. They're not taking in new information.
Yeah.
And they're repeating all the old information.
So do you think if somebody's struggling... or they're suffering with anxiety or their low moods or whatever, breath works would be the thing they put it's under their life then?
100%. 100%. Like, most people are struggling. If they're struggling with anxiety or they're struggling with overwhelm or stress, etc., how they're breathing is impacted by that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not conscious of how you're actually breathing, then we're not conscious of how we can actually control it and shift it. So when most people are stressed, worried, or anxious, they're breathing high in their chest, and they're generally breathing through their mouth as well too, which triggers the fight or flight, the sympathetic nervous system.
Yeah.
And when we're triggering that all day long and we're not conscious of it and we're uptight and stressed, it's driving our heart rate through the roof, which is driving more feelings of anxiety and stress. Your heart starts going through the roof. And when you're breathing, stressed, worried, anxious, you're hyperventilating, you're expelling more CO2. So now it's all starting to work against you.
So does that reduce your heart rate too as well?
No, that's making it worse.
No, I mean when you're doing your breath works.
So when you're doing your breath works, the way that we do it in patterns. So you're breathing in for certain counts, you're breathing out for certain counts, which creates heart coherence. So you get more coherence between the brain and the heart. And you're starting to actually trigger your other side of your nervous system, which is called your parasympathetic, which is basically rest, digest, and relax.
Yeah.
So when you exhale, you trigger the parasympathetic.
Yeah.
And you're able to bring yourself back under control again and make yourself feel more relaxed again by noticing how you're actually breathing, or by breathing properly, or by learning to go, right, well, if I breathe in for 4 and breathe out for 8 slow, then I'm going to start to feel different. I'm going to start to calm my nervous system down. My brain's going to start to slow down. I'm going to start to be a wee bit more coherent and more balanced again and bring myself back into balance and start to review what's going on or what am I being nervous for, what am I being anxious about, what am I being stressed about. So many of these things are just automatic and we're unconscious to them, especially if you're in that feeling.
Yeah.
It's hard to switch it off. And if you haven't got the tools to switch it off, then a lot of the times, as you mentioned, most people are running to try and get this, or they're running to try and get that.
In different ways,
and they're reaching for a drink, or they're reaching for a bottle of this, or something else. But you can improve your heart, or you can improve your health, you can improve your mental health by understanding your own physiology better.
And
by
changing your mindset along the way.
100%. And you know yourself, you felt it in some of the breath sessions. That's one of the most important things that we can do and understand. They know and have the tools to be able to cope with it and go, right, well, I can, if I'm feeling this right, I can change this.
Yeah.
Or if I practice it every single day, then I'm already giving myself the first line of defense, which means I might not get triggered as much. I might not get anxious as much because I'm more in balance. I'm feeling better. And you're starting your day that way, which 100%. Improves your mindset, improves your focus, improves your ability to go out into the world and do whatever it is you want to do.
I'm going to ask you one more question now before we finish up. So, This is the question.
Sounds like a big one.
This is so if your daddy could drop by tomorrow, and what would your ideal day spent together look like? So maybe taking you right back to, you know, obviously before your daddy's illness and stuff like that, the young Seamus.
It would probably be spent with him. I would take him for a few pints. We'd take him for a few pints and we would sit and yarn and chat. That would probably be...
Just talking?
Just having a chat, having a yarn, having a bit of crack, having
that connection
and relax
together.
And have a few stout. That was his thing. He just loved getting out for a pint, loved getting for a few Guinness.
Yeah.
He used to be like a big Wayne getting out, no excited. Out for a few pints of stout.
Yeah.
My ma's let me out. My ma was letting him out. Or the two used to go together. But that was it. He was a real social creature, and he loved getting out for a few pints. So it would be that. I would take him for a few pints again, and we would sit and have a chat.
Brilliant. Well, do you know what? We felt Sian very much in the room tonight, and it was a powerful podcast. Seamus, thank you so much
for
coming on.
Thank you very much for having me on, Bruna.
No problem. Thank you.